Welcome back. You just heard a half hour of Soft Machine. Most recently, Hazard Profile Part 5 is the name of the track. Yes, you do get to listen to all five, and yes, they are all good. Prior to that, we had Slightly All the Time, an excerpt from it. It is a rather long track. I had to do it to him because Soft Machine is just a long form band. I don't know how you're supposed to do a half hour. You can't do it right. I guess you just do it. Prior to that, Stumble from their album 6, 1973. Before that, Bonefire, a little Jack Snack from 7, which came out in 1974. Prior to that, Hibu, Anemone, and Bear, an excerpt from that song. Dedicated to You But You Weren't Listening was before that. And As Long As He Lies Perfect Still, the Kevin Ayers diss track, the guy that got kicked out of the band after the first album. All three back-to-back on Volumes 2. They're all named that. All the albums are named Volumes 2 or 3 or 4, whatever they are. Prior to that, another little one, Riff 2 from 6. Before that, we had Pig, which was another one of the rhythmic melodies, the like big 17-minute long track from Volumes 2. And then we brought things in with Out Bloody Rages, an excerpt from that. So, you're listening to Massive Music Weekend on WRCT Pittsburgh from Friday afternoon to Sunday night. We will be spending 60 straight hours of our favorite artists and bands. You can visit WRCT.org to view the full schedule for our annual music marathon. And the marathon runs on. Up next, we have a half hour of Bill Haley and the Comets.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Today we're going to take a deep dive into critical race theory. Many people have opinions about it. Many of those very same people don't know what it is, but they know it's bad. No idea what it is, but it must be bad. So we're going to take a look at critical race theory, a cultural issue getting much attention over the last couple of years. Okay, let's start with something that a lot of people have asked me to talk about on the show. This is really interesting. The latest right-wing buzzword that's getting people fired up and angry is critical race theory. Republicans are absolutely and completely against the teaching of critical race theory in schools. They want to ban it. They believe it's terrible. It might even be communist or socialist. It's really, really bad. But they don't actually know what it is. Check out this interview that Mark Lamont Hill did with former Georgia Congressman Vernon Jones, a Trumpian favorite, who is really against critical race theory, but he has no idea what it is. Check this out.
What is critical race theory?
Well, actually, I think it's different depending on who's teaching it and how they're teaching it. I think you can agree with that. We were taught that Christopher Columbus discovered America. Well, you and I both know that Christopher Columbus got lost. People are already living here. But there are those who are using their own ideology and their own party affiliation to go to the extreme. And that's all I'm trying to address here.
But what does that have to do with critical race theory? Let me pause for 1 second. I'm trying to understand, though. You oppose critical race theory, which I understand. I'm just asking, what is it? What is the thing you define it? Like, for example, if I said I'm against creationism, I would say creationism is X, Y, and Z, right? If I said I was against the teaching of sex education, I'd say, well, sex education is X, Y, and Z, and I'd have a basis for it. What is critical race theory?
Well, first of all, again, I can tell you, but it's left up to you to understand. I can't make you understand. Fact of it is, the critical race theory, even on its basis, should not be taught in our schools, period. Now, if you can't understand,
but what is it?
And if you want to debate, well, to me, what it does, to me, my interpretation, as well as many others.
No, not what it does, what is it? How do you define it? I mean, I was asking you to define critical race theory because my audience may not know.
Well,
say it again.
You don't know. And you haven't, I said, obviously you don't know and you haven't told your audience. But again, how I see it, and how it's received. Well, then what is it then? No, what is it then? Okay.
Well, I'm happy to answer that for you. But you're saying.
Just answer. I'll tell you what.
I will. Absolutely.
Into debate. Okay, I'm waiting for you to answer. Go ahead and answer.
I will. Just hold on one second.
Just answer.
You're saying that on day one.
Answer the first question. I promise I'll answer your question.
So you get the picture. Vernon Jones just doesn't know what it is. That's just one example, but this is the bottom line. They continue to attack critical race theory without actually indicating that they know what it is. When they're asked what it is, they seem to have no idea. Or they say critical race theory is the idea that every white person is a white supremacist oppressor. Now, we should understand what critical race theory is. And I want to be really clear that critical race theory is not my primary lens through which I view the world. I find it reductionist, but I'm going to tell you what critical race theory is. And then you can research more. You can decide whether you think it's an accurate lens or whether it should be part of your worldview. Okay. The way I see critical race theory is a sort of race reductionism. Now, if you've heard the term class reductionism, there's a very simple analogy to at least give us an initial basic understanding of critical race theory, although it's not nuanced enough, and I admit that. Class reductionists believe that at some fundamental level, any division, any problem, any conflict, any inequality in society, in politics, in an economy, even if it seems it might be caused by many things, is actually about class. Something that to a class reductionist, something that looks like a racial issue, to a class reductionist, it's really a problem caused by class differences. And the racial factors may just be confounding, or they may be coincidental, or they may not even be relevant. So to make a very rough analogy to give us a start in understanding critical race theory would analogously argue that what might seem like a class problem or an economic problem or a political problem, that it is actually fundamentally a problem of race and racism. In the US specifically, it would be racism generally by white people against non-white people, in particular against Black Americans. Now, that's the most basic explanation. It's far more detailed. It's an area of academic research now for 30 years and really even more than that. The roots of critical race theory are in the 60s and 70s. But without getting into, you know, a more nuanced definition would include the idea of creating subgroups of humans, developing law and systems that are inherently racist and designed to maintain these inequalities between whites and non-whites. And you can use that analysis when you look at any system. You can look at the education system through the lens of critical race theory or the election system and on and on. Now, there are undoubtedly many ways in which aspects of critical race theory are completely accurate. Where I disagree with critical race theory, much the same way I disagree with class reductionism, is that I don't think anything is quite so simple. On a planet of 7 billion people, in a country of 331 million like the U.S., we can never really say this issue is solely informed by one thing, whether it's race, whether I've never found an issue where race is the one lens through which we understand it, or class is the one lens, or geography is the one lens. It's just never been that way on any issue I've studied. But this is not about my view. This is about the reality that the very people angrily denouncing critical race theory have no idea what it even is. Now, I want to say one other thing about that. This is not uncommon. Think about the usage of the term socialist during the last presidential election. I've asked lots of these people when I interview them or when they call in or when, you know, whatever, what do you mean socialist? And they have no idea what it means, but they use it and they believe Joe Biden is one. Now, cartoonishly, as one example, here's what happened when conservative Jesse Lee Peterson brought it up when I visited his studio in Los Angeles, and the topic of socialism came up during the Trump administration. Take a look.
Because it's the straight, white, conservative Christian man who's holding the country together.
Oh.
If it wasn't for them, America would be a socialist society already.
It would be what?
A socialist society.
How would it become
because
socialist?
If you notice, the average Black man has no authority, no power. The Mexican doesn't have any. It's that white, straight, conservative Christian man that is preventing them from turning this country into a, you know, a socialist society.
But so here, let me ask you about this. I'm not a socialist myself. I'm a social, just to be clear. I'm not advocating for socialism.
Okay.
I don't know that many actual socialists. Like where's the big desire for the U.S. to become socialist?
If you look at the Democratic Party.
There's almost no socialists in the Democratic Party.
It's a socialist communist party now.
What's one socialist idea from the Democratic Party?
Socialized health care.
No, that's a social democracy program.
No.
Yeah. Is Denmark socialist?
And if you notice that Barack Obama, the fallen messiah, you know he's the fallen messiah, right?
I don't know anything about that.
And Big Mama Michelle. He tried to turn America into a socialist society.
What's one example of a socialist policy that he had?
Socialized health care.
He didn't do that. He did for-profit Obamacare.
Taking care of everybody.
How so?
By getting rid of jobs. Many people, most people...
He took care of people by getting rid of
full-time jobs. And they had to work two part-time jobs in order to survive.
Jesse, you don't even understand the talking points you're using.
The rest stopped working and just went and depended on and relied on the government. Free Obama phones.
That's socialism?
Is that socialism?
So how can you...
Is free Obama phones socialism?
I want to ask a real question.
I'm asking you a real question.
Obama phones are not socialism. No,
really?
I'll answer your question. Let me ask you a real... I really want to know this. The arguments against places like Venezuela and Cuba and other so-called socialist countries are that no one has anything, no one can afford anything, there's no technology, there's no food. But you're saying that cell phones for people are socialism?
Yes.
That's your argument?
Yes.
All right.
That's an example of it.
Yeah. So the point is... there's no difference here. They don't know what socialism is. They don't know what critical race theory is. The first step in every single one of these conversations should be ask them to define the terms, and you will very quickly see that they have no idea what they are talking about. All right, I think you're really going to like this clip, or at least be horrified by it in a sense that will be sort of enjoyable, but horrifying. We've talked about the kind of like manufactured nature of the culture wars that the right is currently engaged in. And the manufactured can mean a couple different things. Manufactured can be manufactured by creating irrational fear through lying to people and making them think that something is a threat to their way of life or to their family or whatever. So it could be manufactured with lies to create fear. It can also be considered manufactured in that it's sort of like just based on either misunderstandings or factual discrepancies, like about the 2020 election, the big lie, it's unconstitutional, and states violated the rules, and dead people voted, and Mike Pillow has access to voting machines that show you all these different things. And it becomes sort of a cultural thing where even though you might say, well, what's the culture of claiming the election was lost? It's this cultural fight where they see themselves as engaged in a war where it doesn't matter if they literally believe the explanations as to how the election was stolen. They see repeating that it was stolen as being on the right team and fighting this holy war of sorts, quite frankly. One of the flashpoints, so many of the flashpoints in this include critical race theory, war on Christmas, communism and socialism coming to America. You could argue the Biden dementia thing is part of the culture battle. The big lie, certainly. There's a whole list of these things, and we can go on and talk about them. Critical race theory is particularly interesting because in an even more pronounced way than with socialism and communism, the people talking about it don't even know what it means. Oh, all the vaccine stuff also would be another element of this. A lot of the people saying critical race theory is just a disaster, they literally have no idea what it is. They have no idea what it means. They don't understand what it means in context, out of context. They just have no clue. This is a video that has gone viral from The Good Liars, who do these really, really great interviews. The Good Liars interviewed a Virginia voter. As many of you know, today is election day in Virginia. We're going to be covering the results live of the gubernatorial race, Terry McAuliffe versus Glenn Youngkin, who's the Republican candidate. Very important race, and there are really important issues at stake. The Good Liars went and interviewed this guy, Air Force veteran, at least according to the hat the guy is wearing, and said, what's the most important issue? And the guy said, it's critical race theory. And when asked what it is, the guy literally has no idea what it is. He just doesn't know what's going on. Take a look at this.
What's the most important issue in the governor's race here in Virginia? getting back to the basics of teaching children, not teaching them critical race theory.
Now, before even getting to the question, what is critical race theory? It's not very small government conservative-y to want the governor to necessarily dictate school curriculum. I mean, remember, these Republicans claim to have this principle they abide by, which is you only involve government in everything when absolutely necessary. If not, you leave things, leave it to school boards, leave it to municipalities, leave it, right? But here, they want to elect Glenn Youngkin, who has made a big deal out of we got to get critical race theory out and all these different things, completely in violation of their so-called light touch conservative principles. But then here comes the question, what is critical race theory?
And what is critical race theory?
Well, I'm not going to get into the specifics of it because I don't understand it that much, but it's something that I don't, what little bit that I know, I don't care for.
And what have you heard that you don't,
well,
that you
I'm
don't
not,
like?
Well, I'm not going to, you know, I don't have that much knowledge on it, but okay. It's something that I'm not, that I don't care for.
You know, this is like when a kid is presented with, you know, broccolini for the first time, and the kid says, I don't like it, I'm not trying it. But what about it don't you like? It doesn't taste good, or you don't like the tech? I've never tried it, I don't like it, I don't want it. Okay, right, but I don't care for it. The little I know about it, which is the fact that you're trying to feed it to me, not good, I don't like it. It's a similar dynamic. Well, maybe inform yourself about what it is first. And our friend Anna Kasparian over at the Young Turks had a really good tweet about another aspect to this. So how many layers are there to this? There's a lot of layers. There's people who are just goaded into culture war issues by fear and propaganda. That's one aspect. Two, the general incompetence of the American public, which we will get to in the voicemail segment. Three is what Anna tweeted, which is, this is what manufactured culture wars meant to distract you from elites robbing this country blind results in. And folks like this guy, they would probably agree, if a Republican says corporations are robbing you blind, they would probably agree in some general sense to the extent that they understand it. If a Republican said, you know, even climate change is an issue of patriotism, like they would go for it. But very quickly, all of those substantive issues, including issues on which there aren't big differences between Republicans and Democrats who are part of the same system that is not working for tens of millions, if not more, of Americans, they get distracted with something like critical race theory, which this guy even admits that he doesn't even know what it means. So sad, funny, depressing, Kafka-esque, to go back to the earlier segment. You tell me how you would describe it. Hey, David, is critical race theory actually dangerous, like right-wingers say? Or is it just kind of reductive? Yeah, this is good. You know, I've issued many critiques about critical race theory on this show. I don't think it's dangerous. I think as a general concept, one can always argue being uninformed can have negative consequences. And so you could say, well, if you believe that no matter how fast you drive, you won't get hurt if you get into a car crash. Yeah, that's a belief that's dangerous in a very specific and tangible way. When it comes to critical race theory, I wouldn't apply the word dangerous. I do think, however, that critical race theory could potentially be harmful to race relations between individuals. That's number one. I do think critical race theory is reductive in the way that it deals with race over many other factors that affect how people relate to each other in modern society. And I've talked before about how, you know, critical theories like critical race theory heavily are supported by ideas of postmodernism and post-structuralism. And this is not me going all Jordan Peterson talking about postmodernism, and that's not this vague critique, and I'm not saying anything beyond what I'm actually saying. But the basis of critical race theory and the genesis of some of the ideology in postmodernism and post-structuralism relies on the ideas in some combination that reality is socially constructed. It's sort of an attack on empiricism, and it's a propping up of the idea that any reality, any notion, any analysis could be just as real as any other, and in some cases taken to a very, you know, extreme place, could be deserves equal footing in discussions about how society should be organized. And then one of the other aspects of critical race theory that I think is very problematic. Now, by the way, if you're going to email me and you're going to say, David, that one piece doesn't apply to all of critical race theory. Fine. I'm talking in generalities about things that exist within enclaves of critical race theory. One of the really concerning things I see are very, very casual claims levied against anyone who challenges aspects of critical race theory, that merely by challenging critical race theory, you are a white supremacist, you are racist, you are an oppressor, you are part of the problem. We saw this earlier this week with the story about the Seattle Pride event, some Pride event in Seattle that was only going to charge a fee to white people. How do you identify which those people are? I don't know. And they weren't calling it an admission fee. They were calling it a reparations fee to get around saying the admission is depending on race. And then when some members of the Seattle City Council said this is bad, this really doesn't make any sense, they were accused of doing violence by critiquing the plan of only charging the reparations fee to the white attendees. That's a non-starter for me. That's the opposite of rational inquiry. And so back to the question, is critical race theory actually dangerous? I think just about any idea, if taken far enough, you could justify and say it would be dangerous in this way. I think that it's incomplete. I think it's reductive. And I think it's counterproductive over the long term to both race relations and achieving real equality under the law and in society. Which I think is an important add-on, because many areas we have equality under the law, but for sociocultural reasons, we don't have actual equality. That's my sense. Let me know your thoughts. You know, we've had a number of examples over the last couple of weeks to couple of months of different things being equated to being like the Holocaust or like World War II or like historical attacks on Jews. And incorrectly so. And now the sort of natural and predictable next step in this is taking place, which is that we're starting to see segments on right wing media saying that teaching critical race theory, or certainly critical race theory being part of the national understanding of how things work, is like the Holocaust. We're going to have a clip of this with right-wing radio host Michael Savage. Now, I do feel, I know that some people get angry when I do the disclaimers. I feel that it's necessary here. I am a critic of critical race theory. I've critiqued critical race theory along the lines that I've critiqued other theories that come out of the postmodernist and post-structuralist ideology. I've critiqued critical race theory as reductive. But critical race theory is not like the Holocaust. That's a wild and crazy thing to say. The Daily Beast summarizes. Newsmax goes there. Critical race theory is the road to death camps for white people. Right-wing radio talker Michael Savage declared the obscure academic theory akin to the Holocaust, prompting a supportive response from a Newsmax TV host. Far-right radio host Michael Savage took conservatives' latest moral panic to a bonkers new level during a Monday night Newsmax appearance, warning that the teaching of so-called critical race theory in schools is akin to exactly what was done to the Jews in Germany. Now, that is not true. We're going to look at the video clip. Michael Savage is a guy we've covered on the program for a long time. He is desperate to maintain some level of relevance. And comparing things to the Holocaust, especially when you yourself are Jewish, and remember that that's something that the right is playing up, Michael Savage is Jewish, that makes it get more attention. It doesn't make it any more accurate. Let's take a listen to this. And by the way, the people who decry the identity politics say, I don't know, should we listen to Savage because he is Jewish after all? Maybe he can tell us what things are like the Holocaust. Here we go.
My blood's boiling listening to Chuck Todd. I wanted to reach through the screen and smack him in the face.
This is, by the way, if you're not familiar with Michael Savage, this is how he normally talks. And it's just a way that it's part of his shtick, essentially, to talk in this. He's just constantly outraged at everything, everybody.
Does he have children? Can you imagine having a little child who goes to school and is told that he's no good, his race is no good, he's evil, his parents are evil, his nation is evil? These are the same SOBs who lectured us for 20 years about don't be a bully, tolerate everything. And now they're beating up white children in schoolrooms. And I'm not going to mince words. You can cut me off if you have to. I know you probably agree with me. I can't take this anymore. And there's only one solution to it. Sue the goddamn schools if they do it to your child for child abuse.
Now, when he says if they do it to your child for child abuse, I have said before, I do think that as a starting point, teaching children that they are in some way part of a bad group because of the color of their skin, I'm against that, and that's bad. For the most part, critical race theory is taught to college students and only in certain relevant classes that college students have chosen to take. What Michael Savage is referring to, which exists very anecdotally, and I would be against it, but it is not really the issue, is certain exercises that have been done in elementary or junior high schools, which start to sort of frame the question of race and goodness and badness in a way that I don't think is useful or productive in any way to bettering race relations. But remember that this is part of the ruse. The vast majority of what would fall under the guise of critical race theory is being taught to college students, and it is being taught as theory. It is not being taught as you were bad for this reason or that reason that relates to your skin color. So the whole framing here is wrong. But let's get to the really crazy part.
You will win because that's the only way to stop this. These children are being humiliated and hurt and damaged for life by a psychotic woman who came up with this lie called critical race theory, which is nothing but racism towards white people. No other race is targeted. I could go on and I could go on and on. I've studied history. I know where this starts. I know where it ends. It started in the same kind of thing started in Germany. The Jews were no good. The Jews did this. The Jews did that. The next thing you knew, they were being excluded from swimming pools. They didn't put them in concentration camps overnight. I study this intimately.
Now, what's really interesting about that, the analogy to the Holocaust is completely wrong. But Michael Savage says something really interesting there, which is he says it didn't happen overnight. That phrase very accurately describes the creeping authoritarianism and nuttery that we saw under Donald Trump. If on the day after Trump was elected in 2016, I had told you by the end of this, Trump will be trying to steal an election he clearly lost, trying to use the Department of Justice and all of these different aspects of government to do his bidding, demanding that the Supreme Court do X, Y, and Z, all of the different mishandling a pandemic during which he will suggest that infected Americans be sent to Guantanamo Bay. Nobody would have believed it if I had said that on, you know, November 8th of 2016 or whatever the date was. But it slowly creeps in to the point where by the time those things were happening, the response was nowhere near what it should have been. It doesn't apply here to critical race theory, but it would have applied if Michael Savage had talked about this in relation to Trump's creeping authoritarianism. Just a few more seconds here.
I'm Jewish. I know how this starts. Attacks.
That's identity politics, by the way. That's the identity politics they decry. Because he's Jewish, he must be right about what things are like the Holocaust.
On white people is exactly what was done to the Jews in Germany in the 30s. Don't fall for this garbage. This is the road to the death camps. Stand up to these bastards and sue them.
Yeah. So there is Michael Savage, and it is yet another analogy to the Holocaust that makes absolutely no sense. And the sad thing about this is There are real serious critiques of critical race theory as an academic theory. When you go to, this is like Jews being excluded from swimming pools and the precursors to concentration camps, you just lose it. And I would actually respect one of these right wingers in their opposition to critical race theory much more if they just levied a sober and sensible critique. That's not what we're seeing from people like Michael Savage. I want to talk a little bit about a critical race theory protest gone completely haywire in Ashburn, Virginia. The school board of this wealthy county, Loudoun County in Virginia, wanted to hold a meeting to close out the school year. And it became complete and total chaos in this Washington, D.C. suburb as parents who apparently are against critical race theory, although it's not completely clear they really know what it is. They wanted to protest critical race theory. We're going to look at some video clips here. This is wild, wild stuff. Here is one parent, the founder of Parents Against Critical Race Theory, speaking to a crowd outside the event. Take a listen to this.
All they keep doing is changing the narrative. Critical race theory is culturally responsive framework, culturally responsive teaching. It's all just Trojan horses. Inequity and diversity and inclusion.
Yeah, who would want any of that stuff, guys? I mean, that's just crazy. It's crazy what they're trying to teach. Now, I am a critic of critical race theory. One of the things that happens in academia is you have a theory and then you have critiques of the theory, and that's all normal and good. But we don't want to teach inclusion. We don't want to teach the value of equality. I mean, he doesn't even really seem to understand what critical race theory is. Then, of course, they broke into the national anthem. Listen to this. I think you get the impression this is not they're just standing in the parking lot singing the national anthem. Again, if you were to satire sort of like ignorant, clueless protests of critical race theory, this is what they would look like. Then the crowd inside the event wouldn't shut up and they had to threaten to end the meeting.
Disgusted by your bigotry.
So there were threats that if these people don't quiet down, they're going to have to end the meeting. And then they did actually end the public comment section and people went completely nuts.
You're not.
Oh, my goodness. So that was after the announcement that they were going to have to wrap the thing up because people were going completely crazy. And things just continued getting wilder and wilder. Take a look. Oh, this is when they go back into the national anthem. The meeting was ended and they go back into the national anthem. Dear God. So that went on, and then the arrest started happening. This is while an arrest is going on. I think in this clip you hear someone yell, "Who pays your salary?" to the police officers as well.
Who pays your salary?
There it is. Okay, so people getting completely outraged, I guess they're mad at everything, getting mad at the police, getting mad at the school board, getting mad at the everybody's furious with everybody. And then this is sort of like the cherry on top. Here is a guy getting himself arrested in the midst of this. By the way, you know, we talk about resisting arrest is used as a catch-all when police want to manhandle someone. By the standards we normally see applied to what counts as resisting arrest, this guy's doing it, and police treating him very, very politely, as you can tell.
You guys, this is an unlawful arrest. I have a First Amendment right.
Listen to me.
At this point, the meeting is over, right?
It's not over.
I love how the guy says, the officer says, the meeting is over, and the guy says, it's not. You can see if you're watching the video that there's almost no one left. So the meeting clearly is over. I think that's more of an empirical question. The meeting has ended, but just another complete and total humiliation. And this is sort of a mind virus. This is an example of where the idea of critical race theory as an indoctrination strategy in high schools has spread like a virus among some of these right wingers. And they can no longer think sensibly. They can no longer behave like adults. It's a real sad thing to see, but they seem to have really latched onto this in a pretty serious way. I don't expect this to go away anytime soon. And we may do even a deep dive on critical race theory at some point in the next few weeks, because it is becoming, I mean, listen, these are adults supposedly. And look at what the idea, the misunderstood idea that they have of critical race theory has done to them. I'm all for serious critiques of critical race theory. I've done them. I think it's reductive, and I think it's not the type of theory that will further race relations. But I'm not going to be showing up and getting myself arrested and screaming. I'm just glad to talk to people about it in a calm, sensible, and rational way. I don't expect this to end anytime soon. We'll have some more of these clips on the show's Instagram, which you can find at David Pakman Show. You can also find me on Instagram at David.Pakman. We'll take a quick break and be right back. All right. This is a super interesting story and a very different sort of military related story than what many of us have become accustomed to. Yesterday, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, was asked questions by Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz about the U.S. military examining critical race theory. Now, the term examining is really the appropriate term. Understanding Marxian economics doesn't make you a Marxist. And much the same way, examining critical race theory doesn't make you someone who guides their philosophy or runs a military on the basis of critical race theory, although you may learn something that's relevant or furthers your understanding, or maybe not. But the point is, simply understanding something, examining it, learning about it, doesn't actually dictate your political philosophy. And Matt Gaetz and others were just getting after General Mark Milley, and he delivered a concise and very astute explanation of why, I mean, forget about just critical race theory. There's a bigger issue here, which is the right. He doesn't say the right, but I've been pointing out the right seems to fail to understand the value of diverse knowledge for its own sake, rather than necessarily as a tool of indoctrination. So let's take a look at this clip. This is General Mark Milley. Super, super interesting stuff. You'll see the camera, if you're watching, go to Matt Gaetz at one point, who's just sort of shaking his head, and he doesn't like it, but he seems to know he's being schooled right now. Take a look.
Mr. Chair, and thank you, gentlemen, for joining us today. I know my time is very precious, but I would like to yield some of my time to General Milley, because I know that he had some comments that he wanted to make when Representative Gaetz was talking, as well as Mr. Waltz, about a similar subject of the stand down and race theory. Would you like a minute or so to comment on that? Do you remember what we were, what your line of questioning or thought was there?
Sure. First of all, on the issue of critical race theory, et cetera, I'll obviously have to get much smarter on whatever the theory is. But I do think it's important, actually, for those of us in uniform to be open-minded and be widely read. And the United States Military Academy is a university. And it is important that we train and we understand. And I want to understand white rage. And
understand what he's pointing out here, right? The military trains for many contingencies which never happen. The military trains to understand circumstances which may be good, bad, neutral, or irrelevant, because that's what you do. You prepare, you learn, you understand. Similarly, when you apply that and say, hey, this is a university, you learn things in university from math. I mean, listen, have I used calculus 2 in my work life? No, but understanding it and going through it has been extraordinarily valuable in terms of now I understand how do we even learn math at that level, which is not a particularly high level, but I'm not bragging, but I'm just saying I'm not using it, but it's still useful. And much the same way, we should be seeing some of this, these ideologies and theories as well.
Right.
And that's an academic, it's the most basic thing, right, about what learning is.
I want to understand it. So what is it that caused thousands of people to assault this building and try to overturn the Constitution of the United States of America? What caused that?
Right.
I want to find that out. I want to maintain an open mind here, and I do want to analyze it. It's important that we understand that, because our soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and Guardians, they come from the American people. So it is important.
By the way, Guardians, that's the Space Force Trump thing. He has to say it. It sounds so weird to hear it.
That the leaders now and in the future do understand it. I've read Mao Zedong. I've read Karl Marx. I've read Lenin. That doesn't make me a communist.
This is literally the example I gave earlier in the show. When I was at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, one of the few then economics programs which seriously taught what the class was Marxian economics with the late Stephen Resnick, a co-author with Richard Wolff in many articles and even books, I believe. It didn't turn me into a Marxist, but I learned what is the theory, what is the genesis. We read Marx. There was nothing dangerous going on. It's called being informed. And to hear Mark Milley say it, I have to tell you, is fantastic.
So what is wrong with understanding, having some situational understanding about the country for which we are here to defend? And I personally find it offensive that we are accusing the United States military, our general officers, our commissioned, non-commissioned officers, of being, quote, woke or something else, because we're studying some theories that are out there. That was started at Harvard Law School years ago, and it proposed that there were laws in the United States, antebellum laws prior to the Civil War, that led to a power differential with African Americans that were 3/4 of a human.
By the way, the general knows much more about all of these topics than Matt Gaetz, but that probably doesn't come as a surprise to anybody.
Being when this country was formed. And then we had a Civil War and Emancipation Proclamation to change it. And we brought it up to the Civil Rights Act in 1964. It took another 100 years to change that. So look it, I do want to know. And I respect your service, and you and I are both Green Berets, but I want to know. And it matters.
By the way, it's not Matt Gaetz that's the Green Beret. It's a different congressman who's there.
Military and the discipline and cohesion of this military. And I thank you for the opportunity to make a comment on that.
Thank you, General.
So the general is completely right. This is just called thinking. This is called being a student of things. This is called learning, understanding. And it makes absolute perfect sense that this would be the perspective that an entity like the military would take. And it doesn't mean the military becomes woke in the negative sense of the term. Now, just to give you one reaction to this, which is so funny. After this last night, Laura Ingraham on Fox News responded to this. And she said the reason this happened is because of Democrats and the military industrial complex. This is, she's like a trapeze artist. She's a contortionist. I don't know how this is what she comes up with, but let's listen.
The active duty servicemen and women about that, sir. Now, somehow I don't think General Milley would ever speak in this dismissive tone that he took today to his Chinese counterparts. Not the way he spoke to Congressman Walz, who questioned him.
What?
I have a question for the general. Why would anyone risk his or her life for a country that's systemically racist? One that brutalizes minorities?
This is what you call black and white thinking. Let's assume for a second that it wasn't just that Mark Milley said, let's understand critical race theory. Imagine for a second that what Mark Milley said was, the military will now see critical race theory as its guiding explanation and system for understanding the country. That's not what he said. But imagine that Mark Milley went as far as to say that. Now, Laura Ingraham says, why would anyone be in the military to defend a country that's structurally racist? Well, you understand. For those who subscribe to critical race theory, presumably the next step is, how do we fix it? And the same or similar motivation that would lead someone if they join the military for the right reasons, which is, well, for if, I mean, we can argue about whether the military is used in this way, but if you join not to go and kill people, as some do, but most don't, if you join the military to try to make the country better, and if you believe critical race theory, you would then want to change things to make the country better. In both cases, you're trying to make the country better. So her, this black and white thinking of if there's any systemic racism, then you wouldn't even be in the military because you'd not want to defend a country that's systemically racist. It's just gutter black and white thinking.
Why would any country respect us or follow our lead if that's who we are? Those are some of the questions he should probably think about before he touts the value of teaching far-left Marxist racist ideology to our troops.
And again, all he touted was, we want to understand what are the conversations that are happening and what are the arguments being made. He never said, let's become a woke critical race theory military. That, had he said that, it would be a different discussion.
The fact is, Milley has made his choice. And he's chosen to indulge the radical whims of Democrats. He'll do everything they tell him as long as they keep the military-industrial complex flush with cash.
And of course, that's just so silly, given that, you know, military-industrial complex is almost as big of an issue in terms of blind support from Democrats than from Republicans. A little bit less. You do hear some Democrats say, we've got to pare this down. So for Laura Ingraham now to say, well, this is all happening, he's taking a left perspective because of Democrats funneling money into the military industrial complex. Republicans do far more of it. So it makes no sense one way or the other. And very interesting to see the statements by General Mark Milley. This is just absolutely bonkers off the wall. And it's really instructive in terms of this idea of neutrality versus objectivity that I've been talking about for years at this point. There is a Texas school official that has been caught on an audio recording saying that when teachers teach about the Holocaust, there should also be opposing views. What does that mean? It's not clear, but it sounds pretty horrible. We have the audio first. Let me just kind of get you up to speed with what this is about. NPR reporting, in one Texas district, teachers were told to give opposing views of the Holocaust. What? A Texas school district is, again, the center of controversy after an administrator reportedly instructed teachers to provide students with opposing views of the Holocaust. Gina Petty, the executive director of curriculum and instruction for the Carroll Independent School District in Southlake, Texas, is alleged to have made the comments during last Friday's meeting, according to NBC News, which has audio. Let's just go right to the audio. Why not? This is Gina Petty seeming to say we need opposing views about the Holocaust.
Make sure that if you have a book on the Holocaust, that you have one that has opposing
How do you oppose the Holocaust?
Gina Petty did not respond to messages requesting comment. I met with two concerned teachers.
Yeah. Opposing views, guys. Opposing views about the Holocaust. Now, this is a great opportunity to again say neutrality and objectivity are two different things. There are many individuals who profess neutrality when neutrality is not at all objective. This is an issue on climate. This is an issue in many areas of life and of discussion. When we're being objective, we're honestly seeking the truth, whatever the truth turns out to be, no matter how it might differ from my preconceived notions or my biases going in. That's objectivity. We just want the truth, and we're not going to kneecap, hamstring, or limit our search for the truth on the basis of our personal biases. Neutrality is about a preconceived balance or agnosticism between different positions where the truth doesn't actually matter. Notice that neutrality has nothing to do with truth. It's just this idea where you're pre-committing to being indifferent or neutral or agnostic between different conclusions or ideas. So when we apply it to the Holocaust, what's an opposing view to the Holocaust? Like, we should include not only real history books about the Holocaust, but also like Nazi books about how Nazis felt about Jews. Like, we should include the explanation of Nazis as to why the Jews deserve to die. And students can determine, was the Holocaust good or was the Holocaust bad? Like, is that what we're talking about? Or we should give a perspective as to why Hitler's goals were noble, worthy, and good goals. Like, what does it actually mean to have an opposing view of the Holocaust? We need the often misunderstood perspective of the Nazis really needs to be explained to kids. And of course, that's part of what we teach. Most serious Holocaust studies, and you know what's going on in Texas, I don't know, but I would hope that it also is the case, would include the views of the Nazis and why the Nazis believe that the Jews had to die, as well as those who have medical issues. And, you know, we could go on and give the whole list. That's part of the actual books that should be used. So this is absolutely insane. As is mentioned in the NPR article, Gina Petty is the name of the woman allegedly on the recording there. She was asked for comment and so far has not delivered any comment. But the right question is the one that you hear on the audio there. How do you oppose the Holocaust? To which Petty responded, believe me, that's come up. Now, the school district head has apologized and said there are not two sides of the Holocaust. That's Lane Ledbetter, who put out a statement saying, as the superintendent of schools, I express my sincere apology regarding the online article and news story released today. During the conversations with teachers during last week's meeting, the comments made were in no way to convey that the Holocaust was anything less than a terrible event in history. Additionally, we recognize there are not two sides to the Holocaust. As we continue to work through implementation of HB 3979, we also understand this bill does not require an opposing view on historical facts. As a district, we will work to add clarity to our expectation for teachers, apologize for hurt or confusion that this has caused. Now, here's the thing, that they may be accurately saying we're not talking about two sides on the Holocaust, but this House Bill 3979, as Karen Fitzgerald, a spokesperson, said for the district, teachers across the state are put in a precarious position by this bill. Our purpose is to support our teachers in ensuring they will have all of the professional development resources and materials needed. Our district has not and will not mandate books be removed, nor will we mandate that classroom libraries be unavailable. But it still does put teachers in a precarious position where they have to ultimately say there is no controversy to teach here. Whereas in other areas, like on climate change, the entire point of these bills is to claim there is a controversy and that it must be that the science of climate has to also be opposed by something else. And of course, that's very different, different situation. So while I guess they're apologizing for saying we need opposing views on Holocaust studies, this is a very problematic bill. And we've continued to see these problematic bills come out of Texas. We'll see ultimately where this lands. Hey, David, why don't Republicans focus on policy instead of culture war issues? Wouldn't it be better for them electorally? I don't know that it would be. And the reason that I say that is it's not clear to me that Republicans actually have the support to win on the issues. What was it that Donald Trump did that prior Republicans didn't do that essentially gave Trump the victory in 2016? It was that he ran a campaign based on cultural issues and personal attacks and fears about communism, socialism, Hillary, etc., where his voters didn't actually have to evaluate policy and say, does the policy actually sound good to me? Some examples where the Republican Party, if they were to run on policy, would have a problem. Abortion is still used to raise a lot of money by Republican candidates. But the truth is that the American public is more in favor of abortion being legal in most cases than it has at any time in the Roe v. Wade era. So if Republicans really made abortion a bigger issue, it might not be so good for them. If you look at the Republican perspective on taxation, when you really get down to it, I've said a lot of bad things about the populist movement and how they can bamboozle people. But one of the things that the more populist Republican base has gone towards is to be more hostile to tax plans that are just good for rich people. Now, Trump still passed one that is mostly that, but because policy was so secondary and the cultural issues were more important, Trump was able to achieve an electorate that really doesn't care very much what his policy is. Most of the things he promised, he was never going to be able to do, and it didn't even matter. No one actually held him accountable. And ultimately, what brought Trump down was his mishandling of the COVID pandemic. I maintain that if the COVID pandemic hadn't happened, and because Trump mishandled it, right? There's the idea, well, Trump could have handled it well and won. Yeah, Trump was not going to handle it well. If Trump didn't end up having to mishandle COVID, he almost certainly would have been reelected. And to me, when you say, why doesn't the Republican Party run on policy? It seems to me it's actually better for them electorally to run on these cultural issues. We're against critical race theory. Nobody can even define it. These people barely know what it is. But it gets so much oxygen. Think about the coverage of critical race theory on Fox News over the last 3 to 4 months. And then think of how it fires up the base and it spreads. I mean, these memes spread like wildfire. Money is raised. I'm coming out in opposition of critical race theory in schools. Donate to me. Imagine if the entire time it had been about like tax policy. They would not have gotten the attention that they did. And so to me, it actually seems, you know, same thing with we're against communism and socialism. Joe Biden's making us a communist nation. You ask these people, what is communism? They have no idea. And this allows them to continue moving forward without ever really having to be accountable for bad policy by just not talking about policy. I actually am increasingly of the mindset that Republicans do better right now by talking about the cultural issues than they do by actually switching over to policy. Check out my segment from earlier this week, whether a culture war is even winnable, because that's another factor that the left has to consider. But I don't think that I think it's disgusting in terms of the debasement of American political discussion that there's one party that doesn't even pretend to care about policy. That's really bad for the country. But I think it's probably, in a sense, the better choice for the Republican Party in terms of winning elections, because they have a constituency that wants to just fight and yell and scream and cheer about cultural issues. And they don't really want to deal with policy in any serious way. That's why Trump won in 2016. Were it not for COVID, he would have won in 2020 as well. Send me your thoughts if you disagree with me. I do want to hear from you. We have a great bonus show for you today. Sign up at joinpacman.com.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem. One that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
WRCT Pittsburgh. Meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz.
CT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
WRCT, the inside from way out.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
To ensuring that the words engraved on the front of the Supreme Court building, equal justice under law, are a reality and not just an ideal.
History is being made in the Senate. Confirmation hearings have begun for Supreme Court nominee Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. If confirmed, she would become the first Black woman to serve on the Supreme Court. We'll hear excerpts of Monday's hearing and get response. Then we look at Russia's siege of Mariupol. We'll speak to a Human Rights Watch researcher who's just left Ukraine, after interviewing survivors who managed to escape the devastated city.
Since March 2nd, the city has been cut off from electricity, water, gas, even cell phone towers. The families I interviewed today spoke about explosion after explosion rocking their neighborhoods, their houses, their walls trembling.
Plus, we go to Kyiv to speak with a Ukrainian peace activist who's calling on all sides to de-escalate and find a way to end the war. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has accused Russian forces of reducing the southern city of Mariupol to ashes. Tens of thousands of civilians remain trapped in the strategic port city with little food or water. There are now no foreign journalists in the city to document what's happening. In southern Ukraine, Russian forces use stun grenades and machine gun fire to disperse a crowd of hundreds of people who gathered in Kherson on Monday to protest against the Russian occupation of their city. Ukraine's defense minister accused Russia of state terrorism, saying its assault has killed thousands of civilians, including 50 children, while destroying more than 400 schools and damaging more than 110 hospitals. Ukrainian officials say a 96-year-old Holocaust survivor was killed when Russian forces shelled an apartment building in the besieged city of Kharkiv on Friday. Boris Romanchenko was captured by the Nazis at the age of 16, deported to Germany and forced into hard labor as a political prisoner in four Nazi concentration camps. He returned to the infamous Buchenwald camp a decade ago to celebrate the 67th anniversary of its liberation. On Monday, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky contrasted the killing of Romanchenko with Vladimir Putin's claims he's seeking the denazification of Ukraine.
He survived Buchenwald, Dora Mistilbau, Pinin Mundei, and Bergen-Belsen, the conveyors of death created by the Hitlerites. But he was killed by a Russian strike, which hit an ordinary Kharkiv multi-story building. With each day of this war, it becomes more obvious what denazification means to them.
Russia has summoned the U.S. ambassador to Moscow to deliver a formal complaint over President Joe Biden's recent remark calling Vladimir Putin a war criminal. The diplomatic row threatens to sever relations between Moscow and Washington for the first time since the U.S. recognized the Soviet Union in 1933. On Monday, President Biden claimed Putin's considering the use of chemical weapons in Ukraine, though Biden cited no evidence.
And so his back is against the wall, and he's talking about new false flags he's setting up, including he's asserting that we, America, have biological as well as chemical weapons in Europe. Simply not true. I guarantee you. They're also suggesting that Ukraine has biological and chemical weapons in Ukraine. That's a clear